You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Well, the question is, will the Yankees score more runs in Yankee Stadium against the Orioles tonight? And who's starting for the Orioles? Jorge Lopez. That guy's an ace. Will it be more than four runs for the Yankees tonight in Yankee Stadium? Or will they be outscored this past Friday in that same venue by NYCFC? It's another edition of the Massive Report podcast. We'll be talking about something we haven't talked about in a long time. The Crew getting completely worked over. We got to pick through it and see what we can learn. And help me with that. It's Lori Benatar, Patrick Murphy, and the rest of the guys have taken the night off. Apparently the game so disturbed them they could not join us for tonight's podcast. My name is Brian Phillips. I work at CD92.9. Check out my station to get a chance. Like and subscribe to the Massive Report podcast. We do appreciate it. We are remote tonight, but not far from our thoughts, our friends at Saucy Brewworks.
Hell yeah, Saucy Brewworks. It is the best bar in Columbus and place to be in the world. Saucy Brewworks, if your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? 443 West 3rd Avenue. Hoping to be back there next week. But we were talking before the podcast with the whole Delta variant. We're hoping that we don't have to make Zoom a permanent usage like we had.
Don't say that, year man. And a half.
I hope not.
Don't say that, man. We'll be. This was purely logistics this week. We had every plan to be there, but just didn't work out. Tight schedules and so forth.
I will quit the podcast if we go back to Zoom full time. Maybe some people are pulling for that.
Why are you so against the Zoom?
I used Zoom so much in the last year.
It's exhausting.
For various things that I just never want to sit and talk to my computer again. I don't. I had a friend in town over the weekend. He was like, yeah, you know, he's moving again. And he was like, yeah, well, you know, before I come back, like we can get on Zoom or FaceTime. I was like, no, like just visit more, you know, we'll figure it out. I don't want to Zoom with you anymore. I'm sick of it.
Wow.
Well, I kind of backed it up. So hopefully going forward, we can improve our vax stats. The Crew stats were certainly terrible on Friday night. I don't know about you guys. But I sat down in front of the game and I just felt bad about it. I'll tell you why. I feel bad every time we play in Yankee Stadium. It's not the beautiful game. I don't know what it is. And certainly you can't use that as an excuse. But after the game, did you get a feel that the guys were like, yeah, it sucks to play here. What are you going to do? Or do they have another explanation as to this 4-1 loss, Murph?
I don't know if it was so much the venue, but I do think it was just kind of a game where, you know, you throw it in the garbage afterwards. Caleb Porter said, you know, we didn't become a bad team overnight. And I think he's right. You know, we've seen this team not at its best find ways to beat teams, including this very own New York City team, you know, and get some results and things like that. And now they're starting to get guys back in. And I do think there's a little bit of a learning curve. You know, you bring back in a Luis Diaz, for instance, who's been with Costa Rica doing some different things for them. He didn't have a good game. You know, you're still trying to figure things out at the back. Pedro Santos went back there. This was the worst game they've played defensively, and not just because they gave up four goals, but how the goals happened in terms of just missed cues and things like that. You know, Eloy Room coming off his line unnecessarily on the second goal. This is a guy who's been the best goalie in the league the last 3 weeks and probably one of the, you know, if not the front runner for goalkeeper of the year. So I think, you know, it really is just an odd game. New York City this was the fourth time they've played at Yankee Stadium this year. Two of those other times they scored five goals. So, you know, to your point, Brian, it's a tough place to play against a team that's really good. Let's not forget that.
I mean,
New York City, Caleb Porter said before the game, he thought they're the best attacking team in MLS. They looked like it with four goals. You know, the Crew got one back late with Pedro Santos. It's good to see him get a penalty kick goal just to kind of get his account started for the year. But yeah, other than that, I think you kind of throw this game out. No one, I think, played well in this game. I think you're excited that you have these next two home games and you're looking forward to getting all of your pieces kind of back together and, you know, seeing if you can go on another run now.
Ori, did you learn anything from this?
I think we learned, and I think Pat wrote the What We Learned article for this game, and I kind of saw his points and I was agreeing with them. I think you learn that every team potentially has that loss in them. And in MLS, it's more common than others. I was just thinking about it because Pat wrote about it, about how MLS is a weird league. You see these kinds of routes all the time, especially against good teams. You know, right before the Crew lost to NYC 4-1, NYC beat Orlando 5-0 in Yankee Stadium, and that's a good team. We saw the Timbers beat the Galaxy 4-1 in this past
Other weekend. Way around.
Other way around. Okay, yes. So we saw the Galaxy beat won. The Timbers. I mean, heck, yeah. DC United, who the Crew are going to play next, beat Toronto 7-1, who's not great, but still, you know, whether...
Miami won in Montreal, I believe, this weekend. Yep. It was these to your point, Roy, these results happen all the time. Maybe not 4-1, but weird results.
Yeah, weird results in MLS. It's not like in the Premier League where, yes, you have the occasional weekend where Aston Villa beats Liverpool 7-2 or Tottenham beats Manchester United 6-1. That happens maybe once in the whole season. These kind of 4-1s, 5-0s, these weird results or upsets, lower teams in the table being higher teams in the table, it happens more often in MLS. But this is the worst game the Crew has played in 2 years. That's the worst I've ever seen them play, you know, since the pandemic has started. It isn't even close. And they want to burn the tape, get the loss out of the way. I think the field has a factor to play as well with how small it is, the turnovers that were being forced. You saw the passing wasn't cohesive, but conceding that first goal really kind of killed the momentum for Columbus. And then you saw room with the mistake there on the second goal coming off his line a little bit too late. But New York City, the one thing that's impressive about them, whenever they have these games where they win, where they score 4 or 5 goals, they always do it with multiple goal scorers. There were 4 different goal scorers in that game. And against Orlando, they had 5 different goal scorers. So Caleb Porter's probably right that this is the best attacking team in MLS. And for 3 games this season, the Crew getting 2 wins against them, they should not, they should hold their heads high for that being their mark.
Yeah. And if just real quick, if you want to, you know, if there's anything that maybe is concerning in this game, and I think that's even saying that sounds a little overreacted to me, but I think it's the fact that the Crew started the game pretty well. I thought it was a good back and forth game, the first probably, I don't know, 15 minutes or so. And then once they gave up that goal, it was like, okay, well, you know, the momentum, the energy kind of fell out. And then definitely after the second goal, I mean, you know, I think if you go in at halftime 1-0 up or down, you come back out and, you know, you make some adjustments, maybe fire the guys up. But after you give up that second goal, you know, there was just nothing. I mean, it was, you know, it was just weird watching a team, especially a team we've seen come back from, you know, 2-goal deficits, 1-goal deficit at halftime, after being down 2 goals twice. You know, a team that we know has that fight in them, you know, just didn't have it for one reason or another. And, you know, Caleb Porter mentioned after the game, and he didn't want to use this as an excuse, that the team got, I don't know if it was a delay or what happened, but they were on the runway at the airport until 12:30 at night, or that morning. So they didn't get in when they thought they were going to, you know, so some weird travel stuff, which I think is just a normal thing in MLS and is part of the reason you see some of these score lines. But, you know, just a strange game, really. I can't, there's not one thing that I can, you know, I can't say, well, if Jonathan Mensah or if Darlington Nagbe, right, or, you know, if any of these, even a series of guys, everyone played poorly. And, you know, it happens sometimes, and that's the result when you play a good team.
Well, I think the correlation in sports is probably baseball. We just see outlier results. You see the Marlins pound the Dodgers on occasion, but they play 162 games. But I think there are enough games in MLS packed closely together enough, and players going here and going there, and they're injured, that you are going to see these wobbles in the results. And we saw it on Friday. We saw it this weekend, and when we preview DC United in a moment, we're going to talk about their weird game over the weekend in Cincinnati. Anything else, fellas, from this game, or should we just crumple it up, throw it in the trash?
Crumple it up, throw it in the trash, I think.
Yeah. All right. Well, since we played DC United, and it's been a while, they gave us, as I recall, in the old classic Crew Stadium, 2 own goals. This was back in what, May?
Yep, May 8th.
Wow, I can't believe it was already 3 months ago almost. That's crazy. DC United looked at that time like a very poor team, but since then they've gotten themselves back into the playoff conversation, Ori.
Yeah, for sure. DC United's really improved. I mean, I remember we had, I think it was Adam from the DC SB Nation site,
right,
when they played here in Columbus back in May. And the discussion there was they had no healthy players. There were like 14 guys out for DC United going into that game. And the Crew was, didn't get a goal yet because they had 2-0, and then they get a 3-1 win over DC. They got 2 own goals. But yeah, no, this DC team has changed drastically. They're playing a lot better under Hernan Losada. They're starting to get a lot of wins and a lot of marquee victories too. 2 victories over Inter Miami in May, June, maybe not as marquee as it was before. And then obviously the 7-1 thrashing of Toronto, which was the nail in the coffin for Chris Armas as the manager for TFC. So they've only lost one game in their last 5, and this team is getting a lot more comfortable playing with each other. You're seeing good performances from Andy Nahar. Ola Kamara is having a great season, 7 goals already this season.
He is
their talisman. And DC is a much, much better team now. So this will be, I think, a more intriguing contest than it was 3 months ago. And DC's right in the thick of it. You're going to see them, I think, compete for a playoff spot this year. They're only a point back of 7th.
Murph, to Ori's point, when we played DC United 3 months ago, Ola came on as a late sub and almost seemed like a forgotten man, as he really has been since he left here. As I remember, he was such a prolific goal scorer for such a short period of time for us. 7 goals, and he's only started 5 games out of the 10 he's appeared in. Is it luck? Is he recaptured something? What are we seeing here?
I think Ola's, he always has this in him. I think it's a matter often with comfort with the team. I think when you saw when he came to the Crew, he had time to kind of gel because Kai was still here. And once he got going, he didn't stop. Obviously part of that trade that brought Giassi Zardes here is as Ola wanted a bigger market, but he goes out to LA and he's sharing forward duties with Zlatan Ibrahimovic, sometimes playing on the wing, and then DC's kind of been a mess of late until, this run of form they've had recently. So I think, once he kind of settled in and was playing a consistent role, as you mentioned, didn't start early on in the season. I think he was battling some injuries, if I remember correctly. Once he gets into that role, I think you're seeing the same type of player you saw for Columbus, the guy who's dangerous in front of goal, is going to be a very good MLS finisher, which, doesn't mean he's going to finish every chance, but he finishes a good number of them. And, I think it's what DC, it's what the Galaxy expected to get when they signed him. And then they brought in Zlatan, and then it's what DC's expected from him that he just hasn't delivered in his last 2 years there. Obviously last year, a strange year, but still only 4 goals in 17 games. So, 4 goals in 22 games. I think this is the Ola Kamara that Crew fans remember. And, it wouldn't surprise me to see him continue on good form the rest of the season now that he's kind of settled into a spot with DC.
Ori, they seem statistically anyway to certainly spread around as far as the assists go. Do they have a playmaker? Not that they have a Lucas, but who's their Lucas? I mean, who are they looking to make plays to make things happen?
Julian Gressel is someone that comes to mind. He always has a good performance in him for DC, and he's been really good this season. You see him usually play a sort of like a wing back on the right side. He does those overlaps. He creates those chances, and DC is going to be that high pressing team. Losada, obviously with a similar mindset to Armas and the Red Bulls of having that high press of always going after the ball carrier, especially after losing possession. So they're constantly on the ball to try and win possession back. And I think Julian Gressel is a guy that exemplifies that really well, but also can help create for this team too. We'll see what the lineup looks like. DC is one of these teams where they're always having a different type of lineup with the injuries they've had and the different pieces on their team. They've had to start some young guys throughout the season. So we'll see what kind of lineup they have. The one big difference though, is that Bill Hamid is going to play because he didn't play in the game 3 months ago. He was injured. Right. So that is going to be a big addition for this match on Wednesday at lower.com field. And it's just in general, the Columbus Crew have actually faced a couple of teams without their top goalkeeper. The last 2 games against New York City, no Sean Johnson, they get a win out of one of them. So now that you have a top keeper in net for DC and Bill Hamid, we'll see if that makes a difference in this game on Wednesday. But the Columbus Crew, one loss at home since the start of 2020. That was the Montreal Impact game back in October of last year, September. I don't expect them to shy away at home. They always are a team that is going to be completely different and ready to play when they're in Columbus.
Well, Murph, go ahead.
Just one other guy who's going to be back in there is Paul Ariola, who's been with the Gold Cup. At least he'll be available. We'll see. You know, Giassi Zardes also should be back. We'll see how quickly those guys get back into the fold for their club team. But you know, if you're looking for a guy who can create some things, we've seen him do that for the national team here recently. And you know, a guy who has been a thorn in the side of the Crew in past games.
Well, that's a good point, Murph. Last night's game was so taxing and a great 1-0 victory, but you have Ariola and you have Jossie coming back from that on short rest. I can't speak for DC United, but just my gut tells me that we don't see Jossie at all on Wednesday.
I would agree. He played 120 minutes.
Yeah, the one thing I will say is Giassi is one of the most fit guys. You know, he just is able to handle those 3 and 8 days type of thing. Now, he did pick up an injury, played through it, obviously, because he finished the game. But at one point, he was kind of flexing his knee a little bit after, I think he was landed funny, if I remember correctly, in the game. But, we'll see. He came through fine last night. We'll see what it's like. But 120 minutes. Not great. And I expect some Crew rotation anyway in this game. Granted, they didn't play on Saturday. They played on Friday, so an extra day's rest there. But I do expect, especially with the game against Atlanta, that there will be some rotation. It'll be interesting to see what Caleb Porter, does in terms of how you manage this week. You know, two Eastern Conference games, both at home. Sometimes you can kind of tell which game he's going to prioritize based on the standings and where the game is and things like that. But these are two games that I think the Crew certainly want to win. So it'll be interesting. And just while we were talking here tonight, they sent out the injury report. Perry Kitchen added with a knee injury as being out. So we'll see how that the midfield has been a problem for the Crew. I know we're going to talk about Artur a little bit later, but that just came through. And Vito Wormgood upgraded to questionable.
Okay. We'll get to the injuries in just a few moments because we do need to talk about our tour. He's going to be gone for a long time. I would guess that he's going to prioritize Wednesday against DC United. And we talked about Bill Hamid, 9 games for DC United, only 6 goals allowed. I mean, they really have taken a similar track as the Crew have, just being very stingy. And so stingy that they took on Cincinnati for a good chunk over the weekend with only 9 guys and managed to get out of Cincinnati with a 0-0 draw. Did either one of you see that match?
I didn't see the game, but I did see the tweets from it and I did see some of the highlights.
It's almost better.
And Cincy fans and Crew fans trolling Cincy fans, particularly Alex, were just like, it's never going to happen. I mean, Cincinnati has now played home games at TQL Stadium for 2 months and still don't have a win in that stadium.
Yikes.
And they had a good chance there. They played against 10 men for most of the second half. It was against 9 men for maybe a few minutes because the second guy got sent off in stoppage time of the second half. But DC scored. I think Kamara scored a goal or somebody scored a goal for DC that got disallowed. But hey, you know, pick up a point on the road against Cincinnati, not a bad result. But at this point, it's, you kind of expect to pick up at least a point at TQL Stadium with the current trend. And obviously,
well, and at least score a goal. I mean,
at least
I know they were playing a man down, but we saw firsthand that you can still score playing a man down on the road against Cincinnati. So, I don't know if you want to read into that too much, but I do think that, you know, if you're a DC fan, even playing a man down, I think you feel like you should have at least found the back of the net in that game. And like Ori said, they did once. It was just, I think it was an offside call, if I remember correctly, that brought it back. So, I think that's, I mean, a point is a point on the road in this league, but yeah, disappointing from DC. And really, actually, I mean, not that we're talking about Cincinnati, but disappointing for them to, again, not get a win at home when you're playing against a team playing one man down and then obviously very late another man down. So, that that continues to be a literal dumpster fire down in Cincinnati, because they had a fire at their training facility a week and a half or so ago that required the fire department to come out and whatnot. Patrick Golden, credit for the dumpster fire comment that he sent out.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a weird measuring stick to compare two teams who played down people and how they did against Cincinnati. But I guess it's a thing now. So as always, it's kind of a mystery as to how we see the lineup on Wednesday, Ori. How do you see it shaping up?
Well, based on the injury report we got, which again, there isn't too many changes. Obviously, Artur, we know his status now. Pat wrote that story.
3 months.
Yeah, basically 10 to 12 weeks. Sports hernia surgery was a successful surgery, which is great. But he's basically going to be out for, you would think, the rest of the regular season. He might return for the last couple of games. At the earliest, based off the 10-week scale, it would be mid-October that he could come back, which would leave him available for the last few games. But for Wednesday, I'm thinking we see Marlon Harrison in centerman again. He's obviously been a positive player in the past month for the Crew. He's been really good in that position. I don't think you see Jossie. I think he's going to get rest on Wednesday after just playing 120 minutes against Mexico in the Gold Cup final. Liam Frazier might get a look. I think you could see him get a little more time playing off the bench.
Oh, yeah.
I think Bradley starts again up top, and then on the wings, he maybe might go with someone like Matan or Derek. I think starting Derek would be interesting. We haven't seen Etienne get too many starts this season, so I'd be curious to see about that. And then I think Pedro Santos is probably going to be the first choice left back, as long as Milton Valenzuela is injured. I think Caleb Porter likes the kind of offense he brings from that left side, the transition and the speed as well. Waylon Francis has put in some really good performances this season, but obviously more of a defensive left back, is not as quick in transition and overlapping. So I think Pedro at left back is going to be the choice. And then I think Buba will start again at center back. Williams and Warmhor questionable. But I think you might be able to see Williams maybe on Saturday, maybe next week early. We'll see. He's progressing. No, Pat's got something.
Yeah, just a couple things about some of the injured guys. The Artur thing, while not good news, I think is better than some people involved with the team had hoped. You know, I'd heard that there was concern, and this was several weeks ago now, that he may be done for the season. Now, as Ori pointed out, this more or less is the regular season. But if you can get him back, get him kind of in the fold before the playoffs, you know, that could be almost like a signing late in the year. So, you know, better than expected, I think. Obviously, this stems from surgery he had in the off season. So you want to get this right. You want to make sure he's okay, especially hips and soccer. Kind of an essential part of the body. With Josh Williams, I know he is a guy who wanted to get back 100%, you know, at his age, 30, 32, 33. You know, he wasn't messing around. He'd already dealt with an Achilles issue earlier this season. This is an ankle injury that he picked up in that Chicago game, which was the last one he started. So he wanted to get fully healthy before he gets back. So, you know, I think him being questionable is certainly a step in the right direction. And Vito obviously will give you more depth if he's able to play. And what we saw a little bit of him last Thursday, I think, when we were able to watch the first 15 minutes of training, and, you know, he was doing a lot of, they were, you know, his warm ups, but he was doing a lot of, you know, intense stuff off to the side with the trainer. So it looks like he's progressing well as well.
Well, that's good. I feel like for the first time in weeks, at least pretty soon, we're going to see us able to access our depth. But Wednesday, perhaps a few more questions along those lines. And I would think that seeing Jossie on Wednesday or not would at least in part depend on where the game is at the end. And I expect this to be low scoring and close. So maybe if he can give us 10, 15 minutes at the end, maybe that's all it'll take. Let's go around our little room here and get some picks, Ori.
I think the Crew bounce back from the bad loss. This will be a really important game to see the Crew's character. We haven't seen them play after such a bad loss in a while. I mean, the worst loss in 2020 was against Toronto over in Connecticut. They lost that game 3-1. Had a 1-0 lead, gave up three goals in the second half, but then they started bouncing back in October, got that big win over New York City 3-1 at home. I think they bounced back positively. Home crowd at lower.com field is going to help them. That stadium continues to be a fortress and an even better atmosphere than historic Crew Stadium. I think the Crew is going to win 2-0. I think you start to see maybe Bradley Wright Phillips get some more looks in front of goal in this game. So I think the Crew wins 2-0 at home.
All right, Murph.
I agree with Ori in the bounce back perspective. You know, this you can make a statement here by you say you want to put that game behind you, put it behind you, get a win. I think it's a closer game. I'm going to say 1-0 the Crew, but I think this defense needs to step back up, play the way that they've expected. I think you're right about Giassi probably doesn't play unless they need him to. So I think it'll still be a low scoring affair. As I wrote, I think he adds so much to this offense that I think they'll be adds so much to this team that I think they'll be better once he's back. But I think it's another game where they grind out a result, but get a win.
Yeah. I kind of agree with you, Murph. I think 1-0 is how I'm seeing it as well. And I'm going to give the goal to Jossie. Comes on in the 82nd minute and scores on a corner. Gives up a rebound. How about that?
If Jossie was able to play 90 minutes on Wednesday after playing 120 on Sunday, he should just fly to Tokyo and compete in the men's marathon after the Atlanta game, because that would be incredible if he's able to play 90.
We only need him for a few minutes. That's all.
That's
true. Come on in the 80th. Get the job done. I have a lot of respect for DC United that I didn't have 3 months ago. That team that we watched, they were, as we discussed on this very forum, they were extremely shorthanded. They looked totally lost in the back. They were yelling at each other. And obviously, they've righted the ship. So this is a team that we definitely have to take seriously. All right. Saturday, we face Atlanta at lower.com. We just saw them down at their place, a game that they put a lot of importance on. It lost 1-0 on Jonathan's header on the corner kick, as we discussed on last week's program. This is a team that is now desperate. Are they any closer to finding a permanent manager since we played them, or no? No?
No, there's been a lot of talk. The Roma manager, I know, was managed. I saw while we're recording this. Sam Stachel from The Athletic reported they'd reached out to Seattle about talking to one of their longtime assistant coaches. It's still very much a search. I think they really want to make sure, while they want to get this done quickly, because you want a manager in there to fill out the rest of this season. They want to make sure they do it right. I think everything I've read about the Gabriel Heinze hire just seems like they rushed it. Tried to recreate maybe what they had with Tata Martino, and obviously that didn't work. So, as a team that had so much success so quickly like Atlanta, you certainly want to get this right to get back to that level, because this last year and a half has been really disappointing for them. But it wouldn't surprise me if they are still looking when they come to town on Saturday.
I would expect that they're not going to get this sewed up. It seems like, Ori, this is a weird time to look for a manager, maybe not.
I think with manager searches, it's usually pretty year round. It's like a 12-month cycle. It usually doesn't stop. I think with MLS, it's a little bit different, just because you don't often see managers from Europe come to, Major League Soccer, but there might be a person out there that gets the Atlanta job. I would expect it maybe to happen sometime in September, October, but in Europe, obviously you see managers get fired mid-season, and they usually find a job within the next 3-4 weeks sometimes. So it'll be interesting to see who they go for. I know some people were saying rehire Frank de Boer. I don't think Atlanta fans would be very pleased with that after he was fired from the Netherlands team, who failed to make the quarterfinals at the Euros. But we'll see if Atlanta can snap this winless run before they come to Columbus. They do play Montreal in Montreal on Wednesday night.
Yeah. Atlanta
played better on Friday. They played Orlando, lost 3-2. Joseph Martinez scored a great goal in the first minute, and Atlanta was up 2-1, but then they blew the lead, and Nani in the 87th minute scored a banger. And we are in August now, so we're approaching the MLS All-Star game. Nani will certainly be a player that will star for that MLS All-Star team when they play the Liga MX All-Stars in LA. So looking forward to that, obviously. But Atlanta still no wins. Their last win was May 15th. It was against Montreal, though. So maybe Montreal is the team that they can beat in MLS. If they win on Wednesday, then CF Montreal will certainly be the team Atlanta would hope to play every week.
Just looking at a highlight of Martinez's first minute goal against Orlando. I mean, that was a corker, and that's crazy. Where they want to get in top of the box, one touch, banged into the back of the net. Obviously you want to get somebody on him, but that was a nice goal and sort of serves as a cup of black coffee for the crew that you got to still take this guy seriously. That was a very dangerous position for him to be in. And certainly what we saw, Murph, when we played him just a few days ago, was that the buildup seemed all right, but they just lacked imagination in the attacking third.
Yeah, and a big part of that has been Martinez being out and not, you know, getting fully fit and everything. I thought he looked better against the crew, especially early on. Credit to both Jonathan Mensah and Abubakar Keita for kind of shutting him out after that. But yeah, that was that goal this past weekend was exactly what you expect for him to kind of take the game by the scruff of the neck and do something special. I think from a crew perspective, you hope that maybe that was just kind of the beginning of that. And he's not getting back to full form by the time they come to Columbus. Because when he's on, he is, in my mind, the hardest forward in this league to contain because he can do things like that. And he can also finish in the box. He can also get on the ball and create a little bit for himself. So, if he's getting back, I think that's a scary thing for the rest of the league. I still think Atlanta has some other problems they need to figure out. They'll get Miles Robinson back, who's been with the national team as well. He helps out with them very much defensively. So that's another boost. But, Jose Martinez, fun guy to watch as long as he's not playing your team.
Ari, how will Atlanta approach this game differently than they did with us at home, if at all?
Probably not cross the ball as much and got to be more clinical in front of goal. And I think Joseph Martinez and Atlanta are certainly going to try and convert their chances again against Montreal. I mean, hey, they got two goals in Orlando. That's a tough place to play. They're a good team. And getting that early goal certainly helped. But bringing your shooting boots is really important. We saw firsthand in the Gold Cup final, nobody could score, and the ball was inches away from going into the back of the net on multiple occasions from Mexico and the U.S. So having your finishing boots and being clinical finishing can really switch a team around from being a mediocre team to a great team in a lot of ways. So I think being more clinical in front of goal, and I think trying to get some shots from outside, test Aloy Room more. Room made some big saves in Atlanta from long distance attempts, but I think that's what you got to do because that's the only way you're going to potentially get them off guard. I think with crosses, Buba and Mensah were reading them really well. I would expect them to do the same again on Saturday, but yeah, be more clinical in front of goal and also don't allow the crew to counter as much as they did in Atlanta. Columbus was countering really well in that game. They were quickly passing from the back. That corner kick that led to the Hurtado shot, that was a great play. You might expect to see a lot of that at lower.com field. But one thing worth noting, though, if you're just a neutral soccer fan or someone that's not too into the Columbus crew, not a diehard, I think this game on Saturday is a great opportunity to see one of the best players in the league in Joseph Martinez on the pitch. So it's an exciting match that should happen on Saturday.
Murph, I'm concerned because we've been able to get our results, get our points, put ourselves in playoff position. We still only have 17 goals in the year. And I feel like this Atlanta match is a chance to do what NYC did to us, put three or four in the back of the net. I think this team needs a match where they completely dominate offensively. And with Brad Guzan in goal, a guy that I don't have a whole lot of feeling for or respect for his game, I feel like this is an opportunity that the crew need to take, right?
100%. I think in either of these games this week, but especially the Atlanta one, if what we're saying is true and, you know, Giassi starts on the bench or doesn't play against DC, you know, I think he's key. Him and Lucas Del Rayon, obviously Lucas Del Rayon, are key to this attack. I think the little things that Giassi does, you know, that you saw some of it in these Gold Cup games with the national team, he just makes teams better. whether it's offensively or defensively. And, you know, the goal that he scored for the national team in the semifinal of the Gold Cup, where he put the pressure on that led to a bad clearance that brought the ball back down and he ended up being the one finishing it. Little things like that. You know, Bradley Wright Phillips has been a great finisher in this league for a long time, but he's 36 years old. He can't press the way that Giassi Zardes can. And that's never really been a huge, I mean, he did it in New York because that's what they did. But, you know, so I think in general, this attack, you've got Zellerion going, you get Zardes back, you've got your options at winger, even Pedro Santos playing at left back. I do think there's going to be a game here soon, and maybe it is this one against Atlanta, where they kind of have that scoring outburst. And, you know, yeah, like you said, Brian, put three or four in the back of the net.
Well, let's go ahead and give our picks, and then we've got to talk a little bit about the World Cup qualifiers coming, and, of course, the great U.S. victory in the Gold Cup final against Mexico last night. So, Ori, what's your pick for Atlanta?
I think Atlanta comes to play. I think they're sick of not winning games. I think they're going to have a good mentality coming to Columbus, and I think Joseph Martinez is going to start finding his form, and we're truly going to start seeing him play like the player that he was in 2018 when he won the MVP and what still might be the greatest single season any player's had in Major League Soccer. I think it ends in a draw. I think it's an exciting 2-2 draw on Saturday. I think it'll be a fun game to watch.
Murph?
I'm going to say a 2-1 Crew win. I think it's going to be a good week for the Crew coming off of that NYC loss. You get two wins at home, you feel pretty good. I do agree with Ori. I think Atlanta is going to start moving in the right direction with Joseph Martinez starting to find his form. But I still really like this Crew defense. I just think as a team, not just the back line, but as a team, they defend so well. I thought they had a good strategy going to Atlanta. I don't necessarily expect the same thing. I think they play a little bit more of their style at home, especially with some guys back. But I think they'll be very, very mindful of what Atlanta can do offensively. Some rotation, but like I said, I think Giassi Zardes could be the starter in that one. And I think he probably gets a goal and the Crew get 3 points.
All right. I like us 3-1. I really think that the offense is going to bubble up in that one, but it's hard to keep Atlanta off the scoreboard when they have, as you say, Joseph Martinez and they're starting 11, but I like us 3-1 in that one. So hopefully a couple of wins this week. Were you guys shocked at the result last night, USA and Mexico?
I don't know if I'd say shocked. I think the way the game played out surprised me because I thought if Mexico had some chances, like I thought if the U.S. was going to win, it was going to really have to limit Mexico. And Mexico certainly had chances to score. The U.S. did too, don't get me wrong. But, you know, just the way that Mexico has played this tournament, I thought they came in with a lot of confidence, where the U.S., you know, has kind of figured out ways to grind out games, which I know is not exactly what Greg wants to do. It's not what he wanted to do here, but I think he understood the team he had. So, you know, I think you saw it again. Once they realized they could play with this team, which was a pretty strong Mexican team, I think you saw confidence build throughout the game. You know, frankly, that game could have had three or four goals if guys just finish a little bit better.
Yeah.
You know, and Giassi Zardes included. I mean, I know the chance he had was called offside, but, you know, if that goes in the net, they probably look at it, and I think he was on. So, you know, if we're going to jump on Eric Hurtado for not finishing his chance, that was a very similar one by Giassi. But, you know, I think credit to this team, you know, this whole tournament, they have been, you know, just a hard team to beat. Greg's pulled a lot of good strings, guys coming off the bench, things like that. You know, he trusted Giassi to go 120 minutes last night after not starting him, I think the last two games. Right. And, you know, he made some bold changes in the lineup for a final too. You know, the youngest U.S. team to play in a Gold Cup final. I think half as many caps as Mexico had in the starting lineup. So, you know, this, I know the Gold Cup this year doesn't, you know, it doesn't get you a Confederations Cup place and things like that. But I still think it's a really impressive that this U.S., you know, I don't want to say B team because I think that disrespects them a little bit, but not the guys you're probably going to see starting a World Cup game, still go out and prove that this is the best team in CONCACAF.
Ori,
for the second time this summer too, I think
could
also be pointed out.
I mean, is Nations League as well. How in Mexico, how do you think this is playing in the media? Is this a disaster? Are they running their manager out, getting somebody else?
There's been talk that you can't lose to the United States in two finals in a month and a half and expect to keep your job if you're Tata Martino. That's at least what the, you know, the soccer pundits in the United States were discussing. We'll see if that ends up being the case. But, you know, I think this Mexican team is still strong enough to be able to qualify for the World Cup. But their aspirations are greater than just qualifying for the World Cup. They want to get to the quarterfinals of a World Cup. They've lost in the round of 16, I think, in the last six World Cup tournaments. But this, to me, is the best summer U.S. men's soccer has had, probably since 2002, if we're thinking about it. Because getting to the quarterfinals in South Korea, Japan was a big achievement. They beat Portugal in the group stage, had a big win against Mexico in the round of 16. Probably should have beaten Germany. They got gypped out of that one. And, you know, 2010 had its challenges. 2014 had its challenges too. And not making it into 2018, 3 years later, to have two sets of squads come in and beat Mexico to win two different trophies. It's an unbelievable achievement. And I think now the expectation of just qualifying, this team will qualify. There's no doubt in my mind that they won't. And the aspiration, I think, should be get out of the group at a World Cup and see if you can maybe make a run at it. There's enough talent on this team where they can surprise some of the other teams in the world. I think it's great that they get the experience against a team like Qatar, Asian champions, hosts of the next World Cup, play a grind in, you know, grind it out a win against them and grind it out wins in this whole tournament. They had 5-1-0 wins out of six matches at this Gold Cup. And I think when you look at the roster that they took to the Gold Cup, in terms of the players that would maybe make a starting 11 for qualifiers, I think Jossy Zardes is definitely in the conversation to be the starting number nine. If Josh Sargent is not going to deliver, and he didn't deliver too much in the Nations League, then I think Zardes is in the conversation along with Daryl DK. Miles Robinson also should be in the conversation to be a starting center back. He had an unbelievable tournament for the United States. A lot of people thought he should have won player of the tournament. They gave it to Hector Herrera instead. Herrera, an amazing player for Mexico and Atletico Madrid. But I would say Robinson and Zardes are the two players from this squad that I would expect to potentially get some starts and qualifiers. Kellen Acosta, too, also I thought played really well in that Mexico game. But regarding the crew zone, Jossy Zardes, another trophy, less than 12 months. He's got another MLS Cup and another Gold Cup. He's, you know, the second fastest player, I think, in American history to 10 goals and 10 assists in his career. He's got the fifth most Gold Cup caps, had a good tournament, two goals and an assist, played really well off the ball, kept his energy up. The doubting, you can't doubt this guy. He's got a great career and maybe more trophies to come. We'll see.
Yeah, Murph, it's sort of Jossy in this particular group of American players. Reminds me of the time that Brian McBride played for the Olympic team.
Yeah.
Old man McBride with all these kids. And, you know, do we at this point take seriously Jossy's opportunity to obviously he's going to be part of the conversation, part of the pool in qualifying at this point. I think he's earned that. But I think when I expect the U.S. to qualify, I really do. I'm very confident. And maybe that's a mistake on my part. But when we get there, will Jossy Zardes be on the team?
I think that depends largely on what other guys do, because you know what you're getting from Jossy. And I think he gives you a lot of things that other forwards don't. Maybe it's not the goals, but it's, you know, like we talked about, the stuff that he can create with his pressure, the way he helps back defensively. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times in this tournament he was running back late in games to help defend and things like that. So I think he adds something very unique there. Now, if other guys, if Josh Sargent, if some of the other guys that are in the running for that forward position have really good years and it becomes just a numbers game, you know, then I think there's a conversation. But I expect, especially given Greg's history with Jossy, that he will very much be in the consideration for the pool. And it would not surprise me at all because of those things I just mentioned, if he's at least there. Plus, it's a veteran guy. He hasn't played in a World Cup before, but not many of these guys will have. And, you know, I think he at least brings some of that experience playing in big games, or he mentioned what he's won. So, yeah, I mean, unless other guys really emerge as like can't miss goal scorers that you just have to take, I think Jossy will be part of that group that goes to Qatar.
Well, it's a short list at that position, really, for the USA at this point, right? As you mentioned.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sargent, yes. I mean, Zardes, DK, Sibachu is someone to look at as well.
I think Hoppy could play that central role if you needed him to. Yeah, and you never know. I mean, there's always a couple guys that emerge, you know, that come to the top during World Cup qualifying and end up making a team that heads to the World Cup. I think you've seen that probably almost every time the U.S. is qualified. And so, you know, we'll see what happens. But yeah, you're right, Brian. I mean, there's not a ton of guys that he has to really beat out. I think he needs to continue to have a good rest of this season for the crew. But, you know, his numbers aren't what Greg Berhalter's calling him in for. I know he's the top American goal scorer each of the last three seasons in MLS and all that. But, you know, the goals are great, but it's everything that he does to help a team. And that's not even always in games. Sometimes that's in practice and working with guys and things like that.
Yeah, Tim Weah, another forward to think about, too. If he has a good season out in Europe, he could be somebody that could feature a lot. And obviously, the name can carry a lot of weight, obviously being the son of George Weah.
Well, we shall see. It's going to be fascinating. And the actual qualifiers are coming at us. Murph, I know that you cover this stuff a lot. What was the thinking behind Costa Rica coming here and the Mexico game in Cincinnati?
Well, I think if you go back to, I don't know, 2009, 2013, there was always this sense, and I think a lot of people in Columbus were always concerned about the fact that U.S. soccer wanted this game to, this U.S.-Mexico game to move around. You know, all the other games move around. You know, you don't have games in certain spots like you do in certain countries. And the U.S.-Mexico game in Columbus, I think after they lost in 2016, it was destined to go somewhere else. U.S. soccer knows that they can make more money having it in bigger stadiums. They can, you know, sell it to people that don't get it as often. You know, not that it wasn't sold out every time it came to Columbus, but they just wanted to move it around. And that finally the opportunity presented itself. So I think there was still, you know, a chance with lower.com field opening, but I think that this is kind of a happy medium. You know, you still keep it in Ohio. You still keep it in a stadium that will, you know, if you do it right, be very pro United States. It's a bigger stadium than what you would have gotten anywhere else in the Midwest, talking soccer specific stadium wise. So I think it kind of meets all of the criteria here. And with Columbus getting Costa Rica, I think what they showed is the U.S. Soccer Federation is that, look, this is a city. This is a city and a team that has done so much for U.S. soccer. You know, that's probably the next best game, right? Just from a on paper standpoint. And Ori and I have talked about this. I think, you know, in terms of a result, that could be a bigger result. Five games in, I think it is. You know, if you can beat Costa Rica there and you've done well in the previous games, I think you're really off and running in this World Cup qualifying cycle. So, you know, I think you still get a very good, very important game. I think the Soccer Federation shows that they want to stay at lower.com field and take games into Columbus. And I think that will continue. You know, what is it, six straight cycles now that they've had a World Cup qualifier or something like that, the longest of any city, any stadium. So, you know, U.S. soccer isn't going anywhere. I think you'll see this Mexico game, even though it won't be the U.S. and Mexico won't have to qualify for the next World Cup. So we're talking down the line a little bit. But I think you're going to see this move around. I don't think it's going to stay in Cincinnati, even if there's a good result there this time around. I think it will be like the rest of the games where they move around. At some point, I very much imagine it'll come back to Columbus.
Well, it's pretty amazing, Ori, when you think about it. These two, it's such vital matches in terms of qualifying, and they're an hour and a half apart.
It's amazing, really. It's amazing to think that Ohio is a place that U.S. soccer trusts as a state where they can get a home field advantage. There's going to be a buzz around the game, especially considering that this is going to be the last time we'll have these big qualifiers in this country until 2029, essentially,
yeah.
Because no qualifying for 2026. You obviously have even bigger games in 2026 with the actual World Cup being here. And I think that's probably part of the reason maybe that the U.S. Soccer Federation picked Cincy for U.S. Mexico. That's a great litmus test, a great audition, because Cincinnati is a candidate city to host World Cup games in 2026. Obviously, it would be at Paul Brown Stadium, which is the Bengals stadium, because of capacity limits. You have to have at least 40,000 seats for a World Cup stadium. So all World Cup games will be at NFL stadiums in the United States. Whereas in Mexico, it'll be at the football stadiums. And then in Canada, it would be at the CFL stadium. So I think U.S.-Mexico will be great in Cincinnati. They'll have a sellout probably with 26,000 plus. It'll be a red, white, and blue crowd, not like we saw in Denver and in Las Vegas, where you probably had 90% Mexican fans there. But Columbus gets a huge game at lower.com field. Costa Rica is a massive one. And though you got 3 weeks there, September 29th, Cruz Azul comes to town for the Campeones Cup. That's the first international club match at this stadium. And then you get Costa Rica for the first international game, where you get to see Zach Steffen return for a homecoming to Columbus. That is going to be something that fans are going to be really excited about.
Yes.
Not to mention just if Jossy plays, if Luis Diaz plays for Costa Rica, which is it's highly likely that both guys would feature, I think, in that match. So it'll be just incredibly exciting to have U.S. soccer here. And the fact that lower.com field at that, by the time the U.S. Costa Rica game kicks off, only been open for 3 months and has already hosted a Campeones Cup and a FIFA World Cup qualifier is just shows how great the stadium is, shows that U.S. soccer is really spoiled for choices as well with the amount of infrastructure. You compare it to 5 years ago when the U.S. played Mexico at Historic Cruz Stadium. Think of all those stadiums that have been built since then for soccer in this country. Lower.com Field, TQL, Q2 in Austin, which is hosting the Jamaica game. Nashville's a new soccer city. They're going to host the Canada game. You've got Allianz Field in Minnesota. And just so many other places that are being built. Nashville will have its own stadium. So U.S. soccer is in an amazing position. And the fact that probably the two best stadiums in this country are both in Ohio is really unbelievable. And I think all this is going to do is make Hell is Real an even better rivalry, since he's got to do its job by being a better team. And I think now that the fans, you know, have this pride of their stadiums, have this pride of their cities with U.S. soccer coming to town for these two big qualifiers, I think all that's going to do is make Hell is Real even better and maybe the best rivalry in Major League Soccer as the years go by.
Well, in the distant future, when the World Cup is in this hemisphere, we can't have a World Cup game in Las Vegas. That field is too small.
Yeah, Allegiant Stadium would be I don't know if Vegas is a candidate city, but yeah, Allegiant Stadium would be a nightmare. I would expect, you know, for thinking about cities and stadiums, Arlington's going to get some big games. The Cowboy Stadium is too nice. That's
Atlanta,
SoFi Stadium.
They have to bring in the grass, though. Seattle,
yeah.
But again, well, that's bring in the grass.
Yeah. That's one of the things. And I know, U.S. Soccer doesn't control where those games will be. But Brian McBride said when we talked to him the day that the game was announced that, you know, as of now, they're not considering any games on turf for U.S. home games. So it'll be interesting to see if they want to go to some of those bigger stadiums. If they bring in they would have to bring in grass and how that works. Cause you know, you saw last night in the Gold Cup final with the narrow field and whatnot, how that was handled. You'd hope for World Cup games, you can have full size, you know, fields. So teams can all be playing on the same pitch.
Yeah. So the candidate cities for 2026, you've got the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
MetLife Stadium, which is in New York. That's obviously going to be picked. FedEx Field in DC. I think that's an interesting one that could go either way. AT&T Stadium, Dallas, I think it gets picked. M&T Bank in Baltimore, interesting candidate. NRG Stadium, Houston, I think Houston would get World Cup games. Denver, Mile High, Empower Field, maybe. Kansas City Arrowhead, I think would be really cool. That's a site that I'm sure people in Columbus would be excited about because it's a relatively close drive. Atlanta, turf, obviously, but Mercedes-Benz is a beautiful, beautiful place. Then you have the Link in Philly, Nashville, Nissan, Seattle, Lumen Field, Levi Stadium in San Fran, Orlando, Miami, Cincy, and Boston.
Well, that's quite a list. And to me, just make sure that, and they have to, just the imprint's got to be big enough. And certainly for World Cup, that will be the case. All right. Well, let's wrap things up here, and we'll see what happens on Wednesday and Saturday at lower.com field against DC United in Atlanta. Give me that Saucy Brewworks love one more time, Ari.
Oh, yeah, Saucy Brewworks, the best bar in Columbus. Just happens also to be the best place in the freaking world because it's Saucy Brewworks. If you're Brewworks, then why not be saucy with it? Why not be saucy with it? Let me speak more clearly. 334 West 3rd Avenue. Check them out. Go down there. Get some food. Get some beer. Watch some sports. It's a hell of a time over there. We always have fun when we're down there.
And they'll be opening this early this fall for the Aston Villa bar Murph?
Potentially, yeah. That's the current discussion.
All right. I did not know that. They're going to open early anyway.
Premier League is in 2 weeks.
Oh my God!
Man U leads a week from Saturday, 7:30 a.m. Yep. Go down to Saucy to watch that game.
I often wonder.
I don't know if they'll open for that, but we do have a bar where we are going to watch United games at. But I won't advertise that on here because we have our own bar.
Yes. I often wonder about this. How do these players manage to not just sleep for a year after some of these years they have to go through? There's no professional sport that's more grueling than professional soccer. Do they ever get any time off? It's crazy.
Like a month?
Maybe. I mean, it is year round.
Yeah, I mean, in a year with a major international tournament, you play a season from August to May. You play the international tournament in from June to July, and then you get 3 or 4 weeks off, and then you're already training for the next season.
I don't know how they stay on their feet. I know they're paid very well to do it, but still, the body can only handle what it can handle. And we ran out of time. We can't talk about the drama surrounding Harry Kane. Is he trying to work his way to
he's trying.
Manchester City?
I don't know about City, but he's trying to get his way out of Spurs. I don't freaking blame him.
Him and Aaron Rodgers. Trying to figure it out.
Now it's about NBA deadline. You know, Westbrook's on the Lakers. MLB trade deadline was bonanzas. NBA free agency started. Lonzo Ball's on the Bulls. All these trades.
Dwight Howard's going more back to the Lakers.
Oh, God.
Help us all. Yeah. Why not? Why not?
It's the week of trades.
All right, fellas. Thank you. It's been fun. And we'll assemble again next week, hopefully face-to-face at Saucy Pix. In the meantime, like and subscribe, massreport.com, for great crew coverage. Go crew. We'll talk to you next week.